ball on the ice. Stands. We got a goal.
Up the colors. We are set to go.
Let's roll, boys.
Come on, let's get going.
We are kicking.
Here we go.
Both guys, 5 minutes each for fighting.
Watch the blue.
Play the puck.
We're not doing this.
Hey. After further review, it's the Scouting the Refs podcast.
Yeah, baby.
Here's your hosts, Todd Lewis and Josh Smith.
Okay, gentlemen, play ball. Let's go.
All right, guys, let's drop the puck.
Josh, it feels like the season is underway smoothly and efficiently. In other ways, though, it's almost as if we're still getting started because there's teams that haven't even had their home openers yet. But I'm happy we're going, and we've got lots to get into on this week's edition.
Yeah, it's crazy. I know there's always building issues or scheduling conflicts, or sometimes you get those renovations that trickle in and delay things a little bit. But man, everybody should have had their home openers. We're trucking along. We've got suspensions. We've got fines. We've got replays, penalty shots. All the things are happening. It is midstream in the season, Todd. We are moving ahead.
This is the Scouting the Refs podcast. Please make sure you're following us on the social channels, on X or Twitter if you prefer. You get Josh at Scouting the Refs. For me, on X, Twitter, and Instagram as well, it's at Todd Lewis Sports. On this week's episode, come on, ref, get out of the way. No touching, slow motion shootout, and hey, that's me on the video. That's a fun one that I think we're going to have a few laughs with. But I think we should first discuss they were collisions, but they were accidental, and it was kind of interesting how they came about. Kelly Sutherland, if you'll remember, on the opening night of the season, had some really nice words for Sidney Crosby, welcome back, and to Connor Bedard as they faced off against one another to start the season. I suspect, though, that Kelly Sutherland's interaction with Artemi Panarin of the New York Rangers was a little different this past week. Panarin skating towards a loose puck and headed toward the goal, but Kelly Sutherland tries to get out of the way, but I don't know that he was as successful as he would want to be in this case.
Oh, the poor guy. He just didn't want to be there, didn't want to get in the way of the play, does everything he can to avoid it. But sometimes you're just stuck in that situation where there's nowhere else to go, and he's giving up the boards. He's coming off to give Panarin a lane, and that's the lane Panarin wanted to take. So unfortunately, the puck gets up in his skates. It deflects and causes a turnover, which is not at all what the Rangers were hoping for there, and not at all what Sutherland wanted to do. You don't want to be a part of the play. You don't want to impact things, and you're trying to find that opening so that you can stay out of the way. And unfortunately for him, he and Panarin happened to choose the same lane at the same time, and there was no avoiding what happened next.
Does Sutherland get credit for a turnover there, or does Artemi Panarin get credit for losing the puck there? I'm not sure how they work that out.
I think we'll go with a takeaway by Sutherland there. It's nice, fine skate work on his part.
Yeah, there was another instance of player and official collision that took place this past week. This one, I would say, was even a little more dramatic. It involved Carolina Hurricanes defenseman Tony DeAngelo and referee Graham Skilleter in a game against the San Jose Sharks. So once again, DeAngelo is pursuing the puck and headed towards the attacking zone. The Canes are actually on the power play at this particular moment. And DeAngelo collides with Skilleter, and the Sharks are able to clear the puck out of the way. I guess Tony DeAngelo suggested some other ways the ref might be better positioned, because that got him rung up for 2 minutes pretty quickly, didn't it?
Yeah, it's not exactly the kind of situation you want to find yourself in when you're Tony and you're trying to keep the play going. You run into the official, and of course the official didn't want to be there. But Tony, I know he's an outspoken guy, but you got to watch what you're saying on the ice, especially when you've got the official there listening to every word you're saying and obviously objecting to what you're saying. So Tony gets ring up for 2 minutes there. They ring him up for two for the unsportsmanlike. The period comes to an end. He keeps chirping, gets another 10 minutes. And then when he finally gets out of the box, Brind'Amour staples him to the bench. So obviously his coach was not impressed.
I guess we would call that the trifecta of unsportsmanlike conduct, wouldn't you?
Yeah, it's you're getting it from all sides, right? And this is another one of those situations that, like you said earlier, Todd, you've got a guy who doesn't want to be in the way, doesn't want to infect the play, doesn't want to impact things, but the referee is giving up the board so the puck can get cleared. And that's exactly what you can see that the Sharks were trying to do. They're trying to clear it. There's a path for the other Carolina player to go in front of him. And Tony D just not paying attention, just steamrolls right in there. There was nowhere else for Graham Skilleter to go. He's doing the right thing. I mean, again, some folks have pointed out, what's he doing there in the first place? Well, he's giving up the boards because that's where the play was moving. That's where the two other players were moving the puck. And if not for Tony, this would have been a non-incident.
I guess the question or curious part about this to me is that there seems to be sort of a protocol. As you mentioned, Skilleter is giving up the boards, and understanding the play and how it works at that level, both the players and the officials, it's almost like there's a protocol. If this happens, then I'll move here and you can get a path, you get a clear path to the puck.
Right. Typically, you see that you're giving the boards to the guys unless, you know, if it's an attacking player coming towards you entering the offensive zone, you might want to move towards the boards because typically the play is going to shift towards the center of the ice. So in most cases, the easiest path is the one around the boards, whether it's ringing the puck around, whether it's guys hitting, and it also keeps you out of the line of fire if there's a hit coming. So, you know, usually as the play is moving towards you there, you dodge a little bit to the left or the right, you give them the lane along the boards, and you can hold your position. Now, ideally, you don't want to be there in the first place. You know, if Skilleter was in the far corner, but again, you've got to go where the play is going. He would have to move behind the net, and you don't want to do that when you think the play is crashing the net, because now you get stuck possibly behind the net, or then you're stuck not knowing which way to go. So it's a tough spot when you can't predict where the puck is going to go. It's why, like you said, you've got to have that kind of protocol on when do I give up the boards, when do I give up the lane. And a lot of the experienced players know when to do that, and some use it to their advantage, knowing that they can almost expect to draw a pick and have the ref be in the way of a defender if they move the right way.
We have one other ref collision. We want to send our best to Emil Heinemann of the Laval Rocket, who was injured in a collision with a referee in the American Hockey League matchup against Abbotsford. Heinemann pursuing the puck around the net, collides with the official. It's unfortunate in this sense, but sometimes this happens as well. Again, purely accidental.
Yeah, once again, it's one of those situations where you have guys that are trying to find the lane. They're trying to figure out which way they're going, and the official ran out of space. You know, they were in the corner and the play is moving towards them pretty quickly. There's no time. There's no way to go behind the net, which is what it looked like the referee was trying to do. So the ref holds their ground and tries to jump to avoid the collision or minimize impact. You know, at that point, you can't really come out. You'll be in the crease. So it was wrong place, wrong time, and trying to do the best you could. But unfortunately, Heinemann goes down, the ref goes up, and a knee to the helmet is what it looked like there. So hoping for a quick return and a return to health for Heinemann, but an unfortunate play all around.
Yes, we talked about the conversations that ensued between officials and referees. Often coaches are, well, let's just say, conversing with the officials as well. There was a terrific piece in The Athletic this past week by Joe Smith and Mike Russo, and apparently, at the GM meetings this summer, the coaches were also invited to be there and participate. Stephen Walkham, the head of officiating, showed a little video to the coaches. It was an assortment of clips of coaches using very explicit and graphic and demonstrative language disagreeing with the calls that referees had made. The story is a terrific read. The gist of the video, or the point of this whole exercise, was to ask the coaches to maybe we can cool it a bit, just take a breath before demonstrating how upset you might be with some of these calls. So this makes me think of a couple things, Josh. First off, I would pay a lot of money to see this video. I think the NHL must release this. Think of the humor we can get with this.
Oh my gosh, a greatest hits video of officials blowing up. And the best is that the guys commented on it in that article, knowing that they were going to be in there. That Dean Evason was like, oh no, he's waiting for his part. Paul Maurice knew that he was going to be in there and reportedly stole the show there. So, you know, Rick Bowness smashing the stick against the boards. It's a highlight reel clip. This is the stuff I guess the NHL doesn't want, but as long as coaches are going to unload, let's at least enjoy it and reap the benefits of crazy coaches. You know, I want Robbie Fatorik throwing the bench on the ice, still right in my brain. Like, we need that kind of stuff. Maybe we don't need it, but we enjoy it when it happens.
Coaches gone wild. I love it. Yes. Now, I mentioned this a few times as well. I think the officials generally endure a lot more guff than they should about this. So I think this was a good exercise. It just kind of proves a point to the officials, like, hey, they're doing their best. Not everybody's going to be perfect, but I think this was a really unique way of Stephen Walkham to demonstrate this to the coaches.
Yeah, I think so. And I think you want to have that interaction. You want it to be professional in nature. The officials owe an explanation to the coaches for what happens most of the time. And the coaches are free to voice their displeasure. But when you go too far, when you go over the line, when it starts getting personal or heated, like Tony D'Angelo did with Graham Skilleter and their collision on the ice, you know, you can have that exchange. But when you take it too far, when things get ugly, when the language gets a little harsh, well, I think that's where they want to tone it down a little bit. But they want that interaction. They want coaches and officials talking. I think even from a player standpoint, you want to see that interaction. And I thought it was funny that they mentioned in there that it kind of follows suit. If you have positive interactions between the coaches and the officials, then the players do it. And if the coach is a bit tougher or harsher towards the officials, then that tends to follow with the players on the ice and more likely to pick up an unsportsmanlike conduct penalty or head to the box for something you say. So it definitely trickles down.
I wanted to ask a question. Again, we're still very early into this 23-24 NHL season, but the number of penalty shots seems to be up. Is there a reason for this, or is it just a coincidence?
It's up. It is up. We've got more calls this year, and no specific mandate from the league that has resulted in the penalty shot increase. There's not something that the officials were instructed prior to the start of the season to watch for specific criteria or anything like that. So I'm not sure what has the penalty shot call volume up higher this year, but it does seem to be a thing. Now, whether it's the speed of the game, whether you have defensemen that are just slower and trying to catch up, you have teams playing a little more aggressively and you get more chances back the other way, I'm not sure, but it's pretty clear that we've seen more and they've all fit the standard for penalty shots. And there are four criteria for penalty shots. If you need the refresher on it, there are definitely situations where you can and can't call a penalty shot. It's not something that's really up to the official. It's in the neutral or attacking zone. It was committed from behind. The player has to be in possession control or would have gained control of the puck and denied a reasonable scoring chance. Doesn't mean no scoring chance. Doesn't mean they didn't get the shot off, because you can still get that shot on goal and still have a penalty shot called if the official feels that you had a more reasonable or a better scoring opportunity that was impacted because of the foul from behind. And there has to be nobody between that player and the goalkeeper. So those criteria just seem to be coming up frequently this year. So like I said, I don't know if it's shaking the rust off. I don't know if it happens to be the strategies that teams are doing or some still adjusting to defensive systems under new coaches, but we have absolutely seen more. And I can't argue with the calls I've seen out there, Todd. It's looked like they've been spot on.
And I wonder if maybe just things even out as the season goes along. We've seen some pretty sloppy and ragged play in some of the games early on because not a lot of veterans have played a lot of preseason. So it's going to take a week or two for things to sort out. But I'll be interested to track this as the year goes along. Of course, the shootout is a series of penalty shots. And I believe Evgeny Kuznetsov has just finished his shootout attempt from earlier this week. And this, I can't relieve the amount of attention that this received once again. It's happened a couple of times. Caps and the Calgary Flames playing. It goes to overtime. So the shootout comes. And I hope this podcast is long enough to play this entire clip of Evgeny Kuznetsov's shootout attempt. Skates in as slowly as he possibly can. Stick handle, tucks it into the net. Some have suggested this is the worst thing in the world. It is a travesty to the game. Well, okay, maybe it's not ideal. Maybe it's not super fun to watch, but you know what it is? Effective. That's why he keeps doing it. If you want it out of the game, figure out how to stop him.
Right. That is the answer. You know, people are complaining about it, and I don't get it. I don't want to see a shot clock. I don't want the countdown going on to have the horn sound that you didn't complete your shootout attempt in time. That doesn't make it exciting. I mean, maybe there are some ways to do it. If you want to have defending players waiting at the far blue line or at the goal line, and as soon as the shootout starts, they get to start going after the puck carrier. All right, I could live with that. But I mean, short of really thinking outside the box, what do you want to do? You want the linesman out there with a radar gun, just like, oh, you can't go below 10 miles an hour. It's like the Keanu Reeves movie with the bus speed.
Right, speed,
you got to stay above 10 miles an hour or it doesn't count. No, it's more rules, more mandates. I think that's what we don't want to have, are especially those kinds of silly rules to just put a speedometer or a shot clock or something like that. You nailed it, Todd. The best way to have people stop doing it is to stop letting it be effective. Stop letting them score.
I don't know. Seems so. Yeah, because if we put the shot clock on, you know what happens next is we get video review of whether or not the shot got off in time. And everybody wants that.
Yeah, that 24.1 seconds, or did the shot come at 23.9? And did the puck completely cross the line? Because now we've got parallax angles and we've got a look, and oh boy.
Yeah, that's a whole bunch of stuff. Okay, one situation we should touch on that involved the OHL's Peterborough Petes and the Brantford Bulldogs. It was a full-on, well, as much of a brawl as we'll see at this point in our lives. Peterborough scores in overtime. The Petes player gets shoved into the crossbar by a Bulldogs player. And as the celebrations begin, the punches begin to be thrown as well. There were a couple of fights penalized, a total of 38 minutes in penalties, 7 game misconducts as both benches emptied out and the milling about continued. The OHL had a bunch of penalties as well. Connor Smith got a 4-game suspension. Bulkus Moore and Nora Roberts earned 2-game suspensions. They were mentioned for an incident earlier in the game and fines of $2,000, $1,000 to the Bulldogs. This should have been a lot more. Suspend at least a game for stupidity.
I'm with you on that. This is one of those incidents, and we've harped on it in the past. This isn't gameplay. This isn't a hockey situation. It was an overtime goal. The game's over. The buzzer sounds. I would come down pretty hard on the player who shoved the opposing player into the crossbar there. That's a really dangerous hit, a dangerous play, but you got to break it up. You got to get everybody off the ice, and you have to drop the hammer on them when they refuse to do so. We can't have this. And it wasn't even just like it was the guys that were out there. You had the benches cleared. We had guys from both teams, crowds out there going. And I was really surprised. Everybody who left the bench, boom, suspend them.
Yep.
Because I can't see that the OHL wants to let this happen. We already had fighting banned in the queue, and now the OHL's probably letting Peterborough and Brantford get away with a little more than they should have here. So it's good to see all the suspensions and fines. Man, this is the kind of thing you can't let happen. So I'm actually surprised, as you said, Todd, you come down a little bit harder on this. And I think $3,000 in fines to both teams, I think two to the Petes and $1,000 to the Bulldogs, not that substantial either. So if I'm the OHL, I really need to drive home that we're not going to tolerate fighting after the buzzer. Absolutely not.
100%. A couple of other NHL things we need to touch on before we wrap up this edition. In the game between the Ottawa Senators and the Washington Capitals, Ottawa defenseman Artem Zub very nearly committed a big no-no as he was trying to, well, I don't know if he's trying to clear the puck or certainly prevent a scoring opportunity. It looked an awful lot like he put his hand on the puck. I don't think he did, but I think he was certainly trying to.
He was close to it. Now, whether he was trying to push the puck along the ice, whether he was trying to cover the puck, it's legal for him to bat it with his hand. He can push it wherever he wants to. He can keep Ovechkin from getting it, but he can't close his hand on it. He can't cover it. Now, I know folks are familiar with the penalty. You do it in the crease, it's a penalty shot. But if you do it anywhere else on the ice, it is a minor penalty for closing your hand on the puck. So it was close here. I think he was trying to. I don't think he successfully did it. So no call was the right call. But if we're looking at intent, I think Zub was doing all he can to prevent Ovechkin from getting the puck on that play.
Yeah, it certainly looks like it. Another stat from early on in the season, and again, we'll track this through the year to see how it goes, but coaches' challenges through the first 50 games, we've had a bunch of them. Teams are 7-for-10. The situation room is 2-for-2 in situation room initiated challenges. And how about the game between Columbus and the Rangers? 3 goals overturned in one period. Is that a record?
It's not. Surprisingly, we've had 3 before in a period, but certainly not something you see every day, and not when you have 2 of them back-to-back offside coaches challenges. So kudos to the Blue Jackets for taking the league lead in the season on coaches challenges. Pascal Vincent, a perfect 2-0. So the crack staff is really on the ball when it comes to watching for the offside plays. And from the Rangers standpoint, you had 2 situations where they're forechecking so hard. They're just entering the zone ahead of the puck or moving the puck right before they cross that blue line. So it's a tough play, one that you have to expect that the opposing team is going to be watching for, especially anymore, how coaches' challenges have become so important in the game. They've got guys dedicated to watching what happens on zone entries. So unfortunate for the Rangers, and that ended up in a loss for them, but Columbus wins 2 coaches' challenges and wins the game. I think it's working out how the league wants it to and getting those calls right.
I think if you win the challenges, you should win the game too, don't you?
You should. Yeah. Well, it depends on the context. Sometimes it's a desperation play, but you know, it's a fun scorecard to keep because we've checked too. And when we get a little further into the season, we'll have it up on scoutingtherefs.com with our coaches challenge stats, is looking at how successful are teams that win challenges, and you know, what is the impact it has on the game? We did it last year, and we'll do it again once we have a few more challenges under our belts.
One that we want to take a closer look at involves the Vancouver Canucks and the Philadelphia Flyers. It was a goal by Connor Garland that was disallowed because of goaltender interference. I watched this clip and I watched it a couple of times, and it seemed pretty obvious to me that this was goaltender interference, but I think there's a few different ways that you can look at this one.
Yeah, so this situation that we had, it was the Vancouver Canucks are firing on Carter Hart, and we have Brock Besser in the crease. So he's established presence in the goal crease. He's preventing Carter Hart from moving across to make a save. There's a rebound. The puck pops up in the air. Connor Garland jumps in there, plays the puck, puts it into the net. The broadcast I was watching initially thought for sure that it was going to be a goal. They were pretty content that that it was just incidental contact, that Hart was able to make a save. But to me, Todd, I think we had two instances here. We had Brock Besser entering the crease on his own and establishing a significant presence in the crease. Under Rule 69, this is not allowing the goaltender to play his position. So that's goaltender interference all day. He could have left on his own. He entered willingly and didn't get out of the way. So to me, that's goaltender interference. Upon further review, I see Garland, when he makes his play for the puck, he actually pushes the right leg pad of Hart over the goal line with the puck. Also goaltender interference. So you've got a situation where there, to me, after I saw the second review, there's zero chance this one's going to count. We've got one goal, no goal, two goaltender interferences on the same play.
I was watching the Canucks broadcast and they also thought that it was going to be allowed. So I think we know where we stand there, but this seemed to me that yes, it was double goaltender interference. Garland's shoulder to the chest of Carter Hart, I also thought would qualify as goalie interference. So that's double goaltender interference. So the goal doesn't count and one counts against you, right? Is that how it works?
Yeah. We're just going to start putting tally marks in there. So you can, you can't get away with multiple interferences on the same play. We're not going to allow that anymore.
And I think that Philly should go on the power play.
Good stuff, man. Where to work?
Get in the box. It's the Scouting the Refs podcast. Read more at scoutingtherefs.com. Follow Scouting the Refs on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Email the show at heyref@scoutingtherefs.com.
You're good, my book.
Subscribe, share, and keep those sticks down.
That's good play.